Well, we're all kinds of people here this evening. Some of you will come here regularly. Others are here with family, with friends. Some of you just love coming to church to sing carols at Christmas. For some of us, Christmas is a fantastic time of year. We love it. We've been looking forward to it for months. And then for others, because of life circumstances, it can be a really difficult and it can be a painful time of year. But together, we have this moment this evening. We have this moment when we can gather together, when we can sing carols, when we can hear the story of Christmas, and we can celebrate the birth of Jesus. But there's a whole load of other stuff that now comes with Christmas. Other things that are part and parcel of this season. So the shops are ready earlier than ever every single year. The John Lewis advert goes live and it's if bang, a starter gun has been fired and off we go. There's the tree to get and to ram into the boot of the car or to get down from the roof. There are the lights to untangle. There's the mince pies. There's the mulled wine. There are the school nativity costumes to create. The office parties, Secret Santa, Amazon Prime, cards to write, emails to send, and on it goes. Now, if even just listening to that makes your heart beat a little faster, you're not alone. Maybe you find that you overreact when you're in Sainsbury's and somebody reaches that last packet of shortbread on the shelf, the very one that you were wanting to buy. Or you go into complete meltdown when on Christmas Eve, the Wi-Fi at home stops working. If you find Christmas stressful, you are not alone. There's a psychological tool called the Holmes-Rahe scale, and it measures levels of people's stress. And so it gives different numbers to different life events. So a death of a spouse is 100 points. Divorce, 79. Trouble with your in-laws will give you 29. And guess what else makes the grade? Christmas. Christmas is listed as one of life's stressful events, and maybe it's not difficult to see why. We try to shoehorn a day's worth of activity into several hours, not only every day, but every week. And it's not helped by the fact that for our generation, everything is amplified by the wonders of technology. And so we have the Instagram perfect Christmas on infinite scroll given to us. We see pictures of the most wonderful roast potatoes and golden turkeys and dads with two-year-olds on their shoulders smiling with Christmas jumpers walking through a beautiful series of snow. It's all edited to look its sparkling best. And the trouble is we believe the lie. We believe the lie that actually that's real and also that's what we have to live up to, that that is even possible. It's hard for us to try and live up to those things. And we forget that actually on those things there is no overcooked turkey or undercooked sprouts or even the other way around. There's no difficult Uncle Fred. There is no norovirus, Fortnite-obsessed teenagers, or all the other things that go with difficult times at Christmas. Disappointing gifts, lonely evenings. Now, it seems, isn't it, that every Christmas, there is the must-have gift, the thing that everybody has to have. Looking back, I can remember at the Rubik's Cube, the Tamagotchi, or that drive to Toys R Us in Manchester to get the last Tracy Island for the Thunderbirds. And this year, there are those things. There's the LOL dolls, the Roblox figures, there's the Nerf gun for boys of all ages. I think you can still get those. And all those different things are the must-have gifts. I remember when I was a little girl, I had a traditional gift. I was given a teddy bear. And this teddy bear, I was to discover, was going to teach me one of the most important lessons of my life. And I didn't know that when I opened it on Christmas morning. I remember the day as if it was yesterday. It was the day I went to boarding school. I was 10 years old, and I remember waving goodbye to my parents. My trunk had been packed, and I had my little bag. I packed this myself, and in my bag was a felt-tip pen, a notebook, and my teddy bear. And I remember that night just lying in the darkness and clutching my teddy bear tight. And then the matron stuck her head around the door, and she said, "Girls, Sarah next door is crying because she's missing her mummy. Does anybody have a spare teddy bear?" I remember holding it tight and then making a decision. And I held out my teddy bear and gave it to her. And it felt good in that moment that I was going to make Sarah happy. But in that moment, something else happened. Something else much deeper at a subconscious level. Because in that moment, I made the decision I was never going to be Sarah. I was never going to be weak. I was never going to be the one that needed the teddy bear. And to be honest, I've lived a lot of my life like that. I set out to be the best lawyer, the perfect wife, the perfect mum, the one who made the brilliant gingerbread stars for the Christmas school fair. No sunken Victoria sponge for me. But I have realized over the years, I can't live like that. None of us can live as if we have something to prove. None of us can live as if our worth is based on our achievements. It's too heavy a burden for us to bear. And the older I've got, the more I've realized that that's just not a great way to live. The Christmas story is full of vulnerability. I realize, looking back now, that that learn at 10 had learnt a lesson that it's taken me a lifetime to learn. That actually it's okay not to succeed. It's okay not to look good. And it's okay when you're 10 and a little bit scared to ask if a friend can lend you a teddy bear. Our culture tells us that our worth lies in what we look like, that our significance lies in what we achieve, that our value is in what we own. But the Christmas story stands against culture, and it gives us a different message. The Christmas story is that we are loved, not for what we look like, not for what we own, not for what we achieve, but for who we were made to be. We are loved. And it's not just those who are at the top of their game who need to hear this message. It's also for those who feel sometimes at the bottom of the pile, who feel overlooked, who feel invisible. I heard a lovely story recently about a lady called Erin Mee, and she is a care worker, and she works in the north of England. And she wrote about the different older people that she goes to visit, and in particular, she talked about Ralph. Ralph is in his 90s. He lives on his own. He rarely gets any visitors. And she says the way he is symptomatic of the way that many of the older people behave that she visits, who exhibit those little signs of loneliness. She said often he will be sitting at the kitchen table when she arrives. And when she leaves, he'll still be at the kitchen table looking out of the window, and he'll be like that for the rest of the day. He'll often follow her down to the drive to the car, and he'll linger just in the hope that he might meet somebody to say hello to. He hurriedly wraps presents at Christmas time and gives her one, even though he knows it's against company policy. And it's her single Christmas card that is next to the clock and the china dog on the mantelpiece. That Christmas card stays there till March because it says to him, "You matter. Someone cares for you. Someone has written your name on an envelope. Someone has written your name in a card. You are loved." This is the heart of the Christmas story. Professor Glenn Harrison writes this. He says, human identity is not discovered within the self, nor autonomously constructed by the self. It is revealed to the self. In other words, God not only reveals who he is, he shows us who we are. One of my favorite children's stories that touches on our search for identity and significance is this one, The Velveteen Rabbit. So just kick your shoes off for a moment as I read you a paragraph from this book. The toys are all talking together in the nursery. And there's a rabbit and a skin horse. And it goes like this. What is real? Asked the rabbit one day when they were lying side by side near the nursery fender before Nana came to tidy the room. Does it mean having things that buzz inside you and a stick-out handle? Real isn't how you are made, said the skin horse. It's a thing that happens to you. When a child loves you for a long, long time, not just to play with, but really loves you, then you become real. Does it hurt? Asked the rabbit. Sometimes, said the skin horse, for he was always truthful. When you are real, you don't mind being hurt. Does it happen all at once, like being wound up, he asked, or bit by bit? It doesn't happen all at once, said the skin horse. You become. It takes a long time. That's why it doesn't often happen to people who break easily, or who have sharp edges, or who have to be carefully kept. Generally, by the time you are real, most of your hair has been loved off, your eyes drop out, you get loose in the joints and very shabby. But these things don't matter at all, because once you are real, you can't be ugly, except to those who don't understand. I suppose you are real, said the rabbit. And then he wished he hadn't said it because he thought the skin horse might be sensitive. But the skin horse only smiled. The boy's uncle made me real, he said. That was a great many years ago. But once you are real, you can't become real, unreal again. It lasts for always. That's our search for identity. What it means to be real. Our greatest need, whatever our circumstances, is for us to know that we are loved. And this is the heart of the message of Christmas. The theme for our services here at Christchurch is Born the King of Angels. And when you go out, you'll see there's some banners at the back that beautifully set out those three words. And they're from that carol, O Come All Ye Faithful. Jesus, born the King of Angels. Jesus in the heavens, God of the heavens, King of even the angels, packages himself into flesh, into a baby, and is born in Bethlehem. And the main parts of the Christmas story are taken by those who are on the margins of society, for those who didn't have a lot to look for. There's a young girl pregnant before she's married. There are shepherds on the hillsides who would have been people on the margins of society. And there are three men from the east, fortune tellers, not Jews, Gentiles, the wrong people in the wrong place at the wrong time. And yet, in the upside down nature of the Christmas story, they are treated as kings. But it's the final verse of that carol that gives us the heart of the Christian message, because Jesus is not only born the King of Angels, but he's born for our salvation. To understand the heart of the Christian message, we have to fast forward from Christmas to Easter. Jesus is born, Emmanuel, which means God with us. The baby steps out of the Christmas story and comes to live as a man among us. He lived among kings and governors. He lived among the poor. He lived among those who, again, were at the margins of society. And he came to live among us, but also to give his life for us, to die on the cross, to take from us all that is wrong with our lives, and to give us the promise of new life and identity in him. A few years ago now, my husband Richard and I went to a Burns Night celebration. It was in Bristol, just near here. And it was a very smart affair. The men were all in black tie. The women were all in evening dress. We came in, we were given a glass of champagne, the bagpipes were playing. We sat down and there was a lady singing from the Welsh National Opera. She was singing songs by Robbie Burns, My Love is Like a Red, Red Rose. And as she began to sing, we were enjoying this moment. And suddenly, we heard another voice joining the song. This voice clearly had not been trained by the Welsh National Opera. And soon the owner of the voice made an entrance. And it was a guy wearing a scrubby grey coat. He had an unkempt grey beard, straggly grey hair. He had a whiskey bottle in his pocket. He was homeless. It was a bit of an awkward moment. Two young guys immediately got out to usher him out. And it was at that moment that it happened. Somebody on the far side of the room, a guy wearing a white tuxedo and a black bow tie, he stood up and he said, "It's okay. You can join us here. There's room at this table for you." And this guy went across, sat down, and joined the party. And here is a picture of him now. It was an incredible moment. That is the message for us at Christmas. However we come, God says to each one of us this evening, there's room at my table for you tonight. He had no ticket, he wasn't dressed for the occasion, but he was welcome and he ate at the table. God says that to each one of us this evening, there's room at my table for you. But even more amazing is that we get the opportunity to make room in the table of our lives, in our hearts, for God. I wonder if the innkeeper, if there was an innkeeper, I wonder if in years to come, if he ever discovered who it was that had stayed in his stable that night. And I wonder if he knew that, if he would have said, I would definitely have made room for him. I wonder if Mary told the boy Jesus that story of that night, going from house to house, tired, frightened, with nowhere to stay. I wonder if she told him the story of his birth. Because at the end of the Bible, the risen Lord Jesus says these incredible words. He says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone will hear my voice and listen and come with me, and open that his door, he will come in and he can eat with me." That's the invitation that Jesus gives to each one of us at this evening. And that is the message of Christmas. Not just that God makes room at his table for us, but we have the privilege of inviting him into the table of our lives. And he says to each one of us, "Come as you are." No matter how far you've wandered, no matter how broken, uncertain, or confused. Maybe you're already a follower of Jesus. Maybe you used to be, but somehow over the years he has grown distant. But he says to you tonight, "Come, there's room at my table for you." Maybe you've never thought about the claims of the Christian faith. Maybe tonight you're not a follower of Jesus, and maybe for the first time you could think about that and hear him say to you this evening, "Come, there's room at my table for you." In the carol, "O Little Town of Bethlehem," the third verse goes like this. It says, "No ear may hear his coming, but in this world of sin, where meek souls will receive him still, the dear Christ enters in." If your hearts have been warmed by hearing the message of Christmas this evening, the choir in a moment are just going to sing that verse to us. Why don't you take the opportunity to make it your prayer, to ask again for the Lord Jesus to come to you, to come to the table of your heart, into your life, and to make room at your table for him. Hear him say, welcome. There's room at my table for you. And if you would like to do that, and you've never thought about this before, on the way out, there are going to be these little booklets, Why Christmas? And this explains a little bit more about what it means to be a follower of Jesus. And so we'd love you just to take one on the way out. And if you want to discover more, talk to one of the welcomers wearing a lanyard and find out in the new year what more you can discover about what it means to know that your identity is secure in him, that you're loved for who you are, because there's room at his table for you.